Our next guest is an artist whose work reminds us that going in circles isn't always a stressful activity, especially if you're at the beach. His medium of choice is the beach, usually the ones near his home in Bandon. There he creates labyrinths in the intertidal zone by dragging lines and raking the spaces in between. Then he follows the labyrinth's path and encourages other people to follow suit. That is, until the tide returns and erases the artwork. We want to hear all about this, how it happens, and why it happens from the man who makes it happen. His name is Denny Dyke, and he joins us now to talk about the making of sand labyrinths and the effect they have on people who walk them. Denny, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Well, good morning, Emily. Thank you.
Yeah, glad to have you here. So how big are these labyrinth drawings in the sand that you make on Oregon beaches?
The largest one I've made is about a half an acre. Most of them go between a quarter an acre and that big.
A half an acre. So to put that in perspective, is that about half a football field, something like that?
Yeah, somewhere along that line. Sometimes they get pretty long. The traditional stuff, of course, is quite a bit smaller, but my dream fields that I've been doing a lot of are that big, yeah.
So a dream field, how long do you usually spend drawing a dream field on an Oregon beach?
Okay, it takes me about 45 minutes to do the drawing, and then I have a detailed designer that does the insert work for me, and then I have guest groomers that do the raking out, all the dark shading that you see. So the entire project's about an hour and a half.
Really fascinating. Denny, if you happen to be using a speakerphone, we'd love it if you picked up the receiver. If not, maybe it's just the distance between us at this point. I want to ask, you know, there's obviously a lot of history to labyrinths, an ancient history, in fact. But let's start with a personal history. Tell us about the first time that you walked in a labyrinth.
My first labyrinth walk was in 2002. At the time, I was teaching metaphysics down in Southern California, and a minister brought a labyrinth into our church, and you could say it was love at first sight. I had an experience that was just phenomenal. I've always wondered what it meant to be present, totally present, and I found out.
What was this labyrinth made of? How was it brought into a church?
It's a canvas labyrinth. It was 40 feet in diameter, and the lines were painted in purple. I also have a 24-foot labyrinth that I use for indoor work.
So when you say that was the first time maybe you knew what it was like to be truly present in a moment, I understand that must be a hard thing to parse into words, but can you explain that to us a bit more?
Sure, why not? It was nothing else mattered for about 15 or 20 minutes. I was just totally within myself. The ambiance was contributed to it completely, and I'd always wondered what it meant to be totally present, living in the now, and that sort of thing. And when all other distraction is out and you are just listening within, that's what it is.
So where did you take your curiosity next? And, you know, this is what 15 years ago almost, you're teaching metaphysics and you discover the labyrinth effect. Where do you go with that energy?
Well, I studied with Reverend Pamela Kilbourne for the next year. She was moving to New Zealand. So in 2003, I decided to create my own ministry called Sacred Journeys. And I did canvas walks. I drew chalk patterns in parking lots. I did lighted labyrinths in lawns. And then I moved up to Oregon in 2006 and didn't do much for quite a while. 2011, I started drawing in the sand, and that's when it started.
Can you tell us about the day, the first time that you drew it in the sand? Did you have the idea and then go to the beach and render it, or were you at the beach and you had the idea? How did that all play out?
Oh, it's all about intention. I knew I wanted to draw labyrinths. I was pretty good at drawing the universal labyrinth, a pattern that dates back to about 2500 BC. So I did go down with that intention. The nice thing about the smaller labyrinths, it basically runs off of the seed pattern, fairly easy to draw. For the next year, I drew several different patterns, all of them traditional, And then I started working with double spirals and that sort of thing. And then I started connecting them, and that's where the dream field came from.
We are talking with artist Denny Dyke about his dream fields. They are sand labyrinths walkable on Oregon beaches, oftentimes near abandoned. It's a single path with no wrong turns or dead ends, and really exemplifies walking as a spiritual practice. Here on The Exchange this morning, we want to hear about your stories of walking as a spiritual practice. Do you pace a labyrinth? Do you hike? How has walking and moving along a path helped you be present, as Denny puts it? Give us a call, 800-838-3760, or you can email us, jx@jeffnet.org. And Denny, you just mentioned the Universal Labyrinth and these different designs. You've worked in a lot of mediums. We invited you here today to talk about doing it in sand, adding sort of another layer of presentness to the equation. But could you tell us about the designs and where they're coming from?
When I go down, I typically draw at face rock and Bandon, which has a beautiful viewpoint, and I have no idea in most cases what I'm going to draw before I get there, depending on the conditions of the sand. And then I just go down and walk the beach, feel what feels good, and I start drawing, and 45 minutes later I'm done.
Interesting. And when you say you don't know what you're going to draw when you get there, have you studied, like, say, I'm thinking of the classical labyrinth and variations on that? There's many different shapes here, which do defy words in some ways. Did you ever crack a book, or were you visiting spiritual places and looking at different designs and that sort of thing? Or is this all coming out of your head when you're on the sand?
The stuff on the sand, typically I found working on the sand that a walk-through labyrinth, a typical labyrinth, you walk to center and walk back out. With the Baltic wheel and the double spirals, it's a continuous path. You walk in one place and come out another. The people on the sand seem to like that pattern better. It's a little easier to comprehend. And then I started linking them all together. And I'm still playing around with patterns, full arcs, that sort of thing, and it just kind of has developed and continues to develop.
You've been very clear that the sand labyrinths you draw are not mazes. Why is that distinction important to you?
A maze has dead ends, wrong turns. When you enter a maze, the goal is to try and find your way out. It's a challenging thing. They can be a lot of fun, a corn maze, that sort of thing. But to be able to walk on a single path, knowing that there's no decisions to make. One of the things I tell people when they come in is, you know, no dead ends, no wrong turns. I wish I could tell them life was that easy.
And to me, it struck me, this had me thinking about the paths that I trace in my life, like, say, the path between work and home, or home and the grocery store, or home and a friend's, and how sort of repetitive and taken for granted these things can become. Did you find yourself meditating while walking on other paths, maybe less hallowed paths or less intentional paths?
Oh, absolutely. Any time that you're walking with intention or just calmness, people find this when they're doing hiking, especially up in mountains and that sort of thing. Just walking on the beach is a meditation. The sound of the ocean, the waves, and all the other stuff that goes together. Combine that with a continuous path on the sand, and now you don't have any decisions to make. You just follow the path, and I'd say 99.9% of people really have an experience in it.
Tell us about the physical objects that you use to draw in the sand, if you could describe the process of making a labyrinth on a beach.
I started just using a wooden staff that I shaped a tip for, and then I moved up to a 4-inch rake. It's a 4-inch wide rake that I put an extended handle on, and that's what I do most of my drawing with. I still use my staff to seal the outside, keep all that energy in. For the grooming and that sort of thing, I use a what looks like a leaf rake, and I allow 8 groomers out there, and again, it takes them about a half an hour to groom a labyrinth.
We're talking with Denny Dyke about labyrinths. He's a sand artist working mostly near Bandon. You can see images of this work. It's very visual at our website, jeffexchange.org. That links you up to many gorgeous photos of Denny's work. Denny, you're talking about the staff and the rake that you use to create these designs. They can be as big as half an acre each one. How do you keep track of things while you're walking it, while you're inside of a design in progress?
Actually, what I do is I start with one of the labyrinths, and then I just kind of pace off where I feel another one should go. And then after that, it's just kind of a feeling, and I don't link them right away. Occasionally, I'll link two together, but when I'm done is when I do the final linking, and that's when I know what the final path is going to look like. I do lay the lines out with intention. A lot of times you're walking facing the ocean. A lot of times you're not, and that just adds to the walk for the walkers.
Can things go wrong in the drawing process? Do they go wrong sometimes?
Every now and then. If you see me just kind of like doing an Indian dance, stamping a little bit, I'm wiping out one of my lines. Every now and then I'll connect a line wrong. And that's what's nice about the sand. I can just erase it. If you do that while you're painting a canvas, you've got a real problem.
Mm-hmm. So do you do these in the intertidal zone? Do you intend for them to be wiped out by the ocean in a certain period of time?
Oh, absolutely. What I do is I work with the tide shift, how many feet of water goes out, and that displays how big my canvas is. And the fact that it does go away, one of the things I say quite a bit is that gives the whales and the dolphins something to walk that night.
Yeah, or the crabs and the starfish, as we discussed in our earlier segment. So earlier you mentioned that you have helpers as well. You have a designer and groomers. Tell us about them. How do they get involved in this project?
Well, actually, I've got a business partner, Pamela Hansen, who took over my photography in February last year, right after I started. We created an LLC in April. About the same time, I met Chris Mehring, who is my detail designer. If you've ever seen any of the work, one of her signatures is a large mermaid. And she does the script work. I also have an aerial photographer. And then that's Teague Mercer. And then Joni Pitcher is my lead groomer. She helps coordinate my groomers to make sure that they're comfortable with what they're doing.
And maybe our listeners have seen these before, the sand labyrinths that Denny Dyke makes on Oregon beaches. Basically, lines in the sand. People walk the path. There's no wrong turns. It's a meditative exercise. If you've ever come across this, give us a call, 800-838-3760, or you can email us, jx@jeffnet.org. Denny, how do you see the public interacting with your art? Is that part of it for you, as engaging people and getting feedback from them about their experience with the labyrinths?
Oh, absolutely. I like to talk to everybody that comes off the labyrinth, and I try to talk to them before they go in. The most people I've had at one of my walks was about 250 plus, so of course I wasn't able to talk to everybody. I've had a lot of people say that the experience was wonderful. I've had people grieving that have lost loved ones that come in and have found some consolation in being there and being able to leave some of that hurt on the beach and let the waves take it back out.
How do you feel when you watch a wave come in and take a labyrinth that maybe you've spent quite a bit of time on and expertise designing it, and then watching it slowly be erased?
You know, it's really kind of a thrill, because when the wave comes up, it'll kind of just nip at it a little bit, and then all of a sudden one will come up and take about 20 feet at one time. Now, keep in mind, people are still showing up. They continue to walk even as it's being removed, because a lot of the labyrinths are still visible. And I have no attachment to it from that standpoint. Matter of fact, I've almost looked forward to it sometimes. Some people say it's job security.
Yeah, that's right. You'll always need to draw another one.
That's
so speaking of which, what are your plans for this summer?
Well, I'm actually drawing with Winter Lakes High School this afternoon. And then my summer season is kicking off this weekend. I'm drawing Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. Sunday, I'm going to be doing 100-foot shark labyrinth. It's a 36-inch path. It's a three-quarter-mile walk to center and back out.
Wow. Hey, let's get a call in here before we wrap up. We've got about a minute left in the program, but I want to go to Anton in Mount Shasta. Anton, you're on the Jefferson Exchange. Welcome.
Hey, Danny. Glad you're still doing the work. I love your labyrinth down at Asilomar, and keep up the good work. It's amazing what you've done.
All right. Thanks for that, Anton. So Anton in Mount Shasta. Mount Shasta, a long way from the beach. Do you have a sense, Denny, of how many people have seen your work or walked in your labyrinths?
I drew 65 days last year, and a low estimate would be 4,000 people walk on the sand with me.
Oh, interesting. And is that also a form of erasure, the same way the tide can muck things up? Does the traffic tend to leave a new path within the path?
What happens, yes, there is one day that I drew that the tide didn't come up and take it out, so later on that day, they were more or less following the path of other people because the lines were not distinguishable. I drew for a private group a couple weeks ago, and I had to draw above tide line, and the labyrinth was actually walkable for 3 days.
And so you were mentioning what you have coming up. Is there a way for people to find out when and where you'll be drawing sand labyrinths if they want to visit them?
Absolutely. The easiest way is just on Facebook, Circles in the Sand.
Circles in the Sand with Denny Dyke.
Right. Or my website is circlesinthesand.us.
All righty. Lots of Circles in the Sand coming up this summer on the Oregon coast. We've been speaking this segment with Denny Dyke. He's an artist who creates walkable works on the beach. Hopefully you'll be lucky enough to catch one and leave what worries you at the entrance. Thank you so much for joining us, Denny.
Thank you very much, and see you on the sand.
All righty. We'll see Denny at the beach this summer, hopefully anyway.